US President Donald Trump is warning the war between Israel and Iran may reignite, and it may happen soon. He was speaking at The Hague at the end of the NATO summit, where some members have agreed to ramp up their defence spending to 5% of GDP by 2035. It's in response to a demand made by Trump. With the US strikes on Iran dominated the talks, Trump says that while he's confident negotiations with Iran are the next logical step, there's a chance the ceasefire may not hold.
They fought very, very hard and very viciously, very violently, and they were both satisfied to go home and get out. And can it start again? I guess someday it can. It could maybe start soon. I think a big telltale sign was when, as you know, Iran somewhat, by not much, violated the ceasefire, and Israel had the planes going out that morning, and there were a lot of them, 52 of them. And I said, you got to get them back. And they brought them back. They didn't do anything. They brought them back. It was very good. I thought it was amazing, actually. They have fought a hell of a war. They fought very hard.
All right. That's the voice of our president. And now you'll be surprised that the source of that news story was Al Jazeera. This was not long after the strike. And, of course, President Trump, I honestly do think he knows so many things, but I'm not sure he understands what's called the eschatology of Shia Islam, and that's what Iran practices. It's not Sunni, it's Shia. There's a divide between them. And the Shias believe that there's going to be a fourth imam. It's kind of like the Christian eschatology on the second coming of Christ, only they think a fourth imam is coming. That's what they call him, and they're going to rule the world, and they are bound to rule. There's going to be destruction, and they're going to be doing the destroying. So they're not going to be calmed down by, you know, talks, and they're very smart, but they are very cunning. And so we have to be very careful, and I hope President Trump gets the word. Maybe he'll get it, I'm sure, if he hasn't already been sort of briefed on this in a better way. So what's happened since those attacks, since we blew out Fordow, Natanz, and Isfahan? What's happened? What's happened with the Ayatollahs? Did they survive? What about the dissenters in Iran, the people that want to be free, that don't want the Ayatollahs ruling them? What's going on right now, and will there be talks or not? We're going to discuss that today on Sandy Rios 24/7. But first, well, when you think about the 4th of July, I think about the Declaration of Independence, which, of course, many of us had to memorize. It's we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, unquestioning, in other words, just they're just part of the product, they're in the DNA, and that is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Doesn't end there, but we're going to end there because the point is that there are vast numbers of Americans who have not had a chance for life because their mothers have decided to terminate their lives, either in utero or with the abortion pill, whatever they're doing. And so even if for no other reason, that shouldn't happen in America because we've promised everyone the right to life, and that includes our babies. So on this July, the celebrating the birth of our nation, we remember that. And we want to do everything we can to change it. Preborn is certainly doing that, and that's by showing moms the photos of their baby in utero, where they can see them sucking their thumb or moving around. It's just beautiful, and that's what happens, and it changes moms' minds. Most of them actually do change their mind when they see that. One ultrasound is $28, and we just hope and pray that you'll be generous and give your best amount to help stop taking the lives of unborn babies in this country. We need to do it right now. So lots of things, good things are happening. Let's add this to the list. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, you can call us. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040 and leave a message, some response, some thing of observation, something you didn't like, something you did like. We love hearing from you. So call 662-821-2040 and don't leave us a message about what you think about what you're hearing. Or you can write us at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any of the social media platforms. And you can also find us at my website, which is sandyrios.com. I think that it's easier to listen to the podcast doing that. If you're not used to podcasting, sandyrios.com. However, if you're an AFR listener, you probably have already discovered, I hope, that you can go to afr.net, and listen to the program, or you can go to any social media platform, Apple or Spotify or Amazon or any of those, and listen to Sandy Rios 24/7 anytime. Well, you can listen to it, by the way, 24/7. Wasn't that clever? Anyway, so there are lots of ways to listen, and I encourage you to do that. All right, well, a good friend is joining us today. She's a former CIA agent and has accolades galore, but she's an expert on Iran and on Russia, and she's going to tell us from her own information and sources what she's heard about what's happening in the aftermath of that attack in mid-June from the United States and Israel on Iran. So it's going to be a great one, so stay tuned on Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Why should I be embarrassed to ask what's in this war for us? We got to go to war. Shut up. You're a bigot if you don't want it. First of all, I'm not a bigot. But second, that's kind of not the point. The point is, what's in it for us? Why is this a good idea? Shut up. And it's exactly the style of argument that I voted against, and I will never accept it. I don't care who does it. I will never accept that. Give me a legitimate answer, a reasonable answer, a sincere answer, a good faith answer. We may disagree. You may say, as a good friend of mine who's like totally deranged, but a good person said to me yesterday, Iran is the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. You know, reading the talking point that apparently everyone, a bumper sticker that is for sale somewhere, I guess. And I'm like, okay, I don't even know what that means exactly, but how many Americans have been killed by Shia terrorism in my lifetime, which is 56 years? I can't think of any. I'm sure there have been some in the United States. There have been Shia terror attacks sponsored by Iran in the U.S. I can't think of any. There was 9/11. That was a Sunni terror attack. And then there's the drug epidemic, which has killed more than 1 million people during that same period. People I know, my next door neighbor's kid, dead. People, a bunch of people I know have died, and a bunch have been totally screwed up and taken out of life, basically. Their lives have been hollowed out. They're husks. They've been totally destroyed by drugs. That's the reality that I live in the United States. So you're telling me Iran is a bigger threat than the people peddling this garbage? I don't think so. Not where I live, it's not. Oh, shut up. And the person literally said, you know, we're going to have to agree to disagree. Disagree with what? What are you even talking about? But at least he gave me an answer.
It's not to personally condemn Tucker Carlson, but it is to give you a warning that his advice right now is off base. Now, look, I'm not an expert in Iran. I know a lot about it. You've heard me talk a lot about it, interview people about it. But just in my lifetime, I've seen that many of the things that he's saying are just not true. But I have asked Claire Lopez to join us today because Claire is a good friend. She's the founder and president of Lopez Liberty LLC. She serves on the Senior Advisory Board for the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. She worked with, she was the VP for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy and has been a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research and a member of the Board of Advisors for the Canadian McKinsey Institute. She's been an instructor in Iran, Hezbollah, the Red, Black, Green Axis, and for Understanding the Threat, and currently is an instructor for UTT's online National Security Academy. And Claire talks and gives speeches all over the world. But I think we certainly intersected when I was in D.C. and Claire taught me a lot about Islam. We ended up being on the same list of women against Islam by the SPLC. They put us on a hit list. And so that's Claire Lopez. And Claire, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Sandy, it's so good to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
Let me just, and I didn't say that you were with the agency. I mean, I can say that, right?
Yeah, sure, for 20 years. I was in Russia division all of that time, and that followed my master's degree, which was a Russia-focused degree, international relations, but Cold War, Russia focus. So I've had many, many years of delving into all things Russian.
Yeah. But so then I don't necessarily want us to talk about the conflict with Putin, although we probably will get into it. But in brief, it's possible. What I always think of Iran and Russia as joined at the hip during these difficult times. It is not a recent story. Russia has built a real alliance with them, but it hasn't always been so, has it?
No, it has not always been so, but you're right that recently there is something we might call an axis of the rogues or axis of maybe the aggressors, and that would be Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. And for a long time, Iran has been supplying Russia with drones, drone technology, and other things. And of course, Russia for many decades has helped Iran's nuclear weapons program. So they have been close. But after recent events in the Middle East, basically the takedown of the Iranian regime, certainly of its nuclear weapons program, by coordinated, very closely coordinated strikes by Israel and the United States, I think that Iran is seen by both probably Russia and China as less of a any kind of a valuable ally, at least for the time being, not really having anything to contribute anymore at this point to them.
Well, let's talk about, I'm really most curious to know what is happening right now, because we've been after the bombing of Fordow and Natanz and Isfahan, those nuclear sites that America did, then suddenly the whole thing was called off, and that was a bit of it's like going down a freight train, 400 miles an hour and stopping suddenly. So that was a little disconcerting. Then President Trump promised we were going to have talks with Iran and maybe even do, economic ventures with them. It was surreal. But that hasn't happened. But let's talk about what's happened in the ensuing weeks. It's just been maybe, I don't know, the time goes so fast, maybe just 10 days, maybe 2 weeks.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so what's going on in Iran
right now? In the middle of June. Pardon? Say again?
So that's what's going on now after that attack?
Yes, okay. So these attacks came in the middle of June. Israel began the night of 13-14 June with what they called Operation Rising Lion, a verse I'm sure you'll know, taken directly from the Old Testament, the Tanakh. That the Israeli people shall rise as lions. That's where the name of the operation comes from. And then a week or so later comes Operation Midnight Hammer, and that was the United States sending our B-2 bombers, as well as escorting fighter jets and refueling tankers, over to finish the job on those three you just mentioned: Isfahan, the conversion site, Fardo, the deeply buried underground centrifuge enrichment site, and Natanz, also underground, deeply buried enrichment site. So since then, there's been a lot of commentary on exactly how much damage was done and what Iran might do next. And so I'll tell you, the sources I listen to are, of course, the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, headed up by Rafael Grossi, their director general. And then also very helpful is David Albright's group. We call it the Good ISIS because the acronym is ISIS, but it stands for Institute for Science and International Security.
Okay.
And those two are very good sources for sort of, BDAs, battle damage assessments, or after action reports, however you want to call them. And it looks like those three sites are out of commission, at least for now. Whether or not there are other sites, And I would actually be astonished if there were not other sites, secret sites, even that perhaps the IAEA, which has been blocked in many recent years by Iran, its inspectors have been blocked, and it's also its equipment, monitoring equipment, cameras inside of the sites, blocked. So they don't have, and Rafael Grossi will say this, don't have a full, good, accurate picture of what's going on, and certainly not really sure about any other sites that may have escaped U.S. and Israeli bombing.
What about that?
Speculation's been going on about, what might be left of the program. Could there be other sites, perhaps also buried under mountains? The likelihood that some centrifuges, maybe enriched uranium too, have been saved out at some other place seems to me likely, but nobody knows that for sure. So that's still speculation. So
yeah.
The other thing I will add real quick is that the other thing that the Israelis in particular took out were eliminating, I don't know what the number is, 15, 16 or more of the very top nuclear scientists in the Iranian nuclear weapons program. I mean, absolutely precision targeted strikes going through bedroom windows. And that speaks to an amazing capability of intelligence penetration by the Mossad inside of Iran, obviously working with the Iranian resistance inside of Iran for many years. In my own opinion, nobody says this, but in my opinion, that inside Iranian resistance force includes the MEK, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq. Of course, there are also other ethnic groups around the periphery geographically of Iran that are in armed revolt against the regime, meaning the Baluchis, the Azeris. Azeris, I'm not sure so much are armed, but the Baluchis are, the Kurds are, and the Ahwaz Arabs are. So all of that, throw it into the after-action assessment here.
Yeah. Well, it is confusing, that's for sure. One thing we know they haven't, after lobbing those missiles at Israel immediately after that, or the next morning, after that big attack, I don't think they've done much, have they, Claire? Haven't they gone kind of, they haven't done strikes, have
yes.
they?
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, those retaliatory strikes did do a significant amount of damage to Israeli civilian areas, apartments and so forth, with I think it was something like, if I've got the number right, 28 deaths, casualties, more injuries as well. But yes, you're right that since then things have gone quiet, and I think in some large measure, not only has the regime in Tehran, lost a tremendous amount of capability, but I think that they have been at least deterred in the short term. They don't know. Here's the thing: the regime doesn't know who among them is a reporting source for the Mossad. They know now how deeply they're penetrated, but they don't know who. They don't know who's left, or who, has gotten out of the country, perhaps. They're cowed at the moment, but that's not going to last. I think they will double down on efforts to reconstitute their nuclear weapons program as quickly as they possibly can, as well as their ballistic missile delivery system. And, of course, the Israelis and we, I hope we, will be alert to any such efforts to put the kibosh on them.
Claire, one criticism that I've heard, and I've been talking about this in one way or the other for several days, especially Tucker's, Marjorie Taylor Greene's comments, even Steve Bannon, all of them friends of ours, at least friend, in our camp, I'd say that. And they've been saying, lobbing these criticisms that how did we know that the Iranians were close to enrichment, to those sources where they were going to be coming up with a nuclear delivery of a warhead? How do we know that? And it wasn't our intelligence services. It was the Mossad. And so we listened to foreign intelligence. And they talked President Trump into going this into Iran based on this foreign intelligence that Bibi Netanyahu is using because he's in trouble in his own country, and they fooled President Trump into going into that. So I want to ask you, is the Mossad a trustworthy source of intelligence?
Oh, absolutely. They are the absolute best intelligence service in the Middle East. There's nobody that matches them. Nobody comes close, and that includes us. They have far better intelligence capabilities than we do in the Middle East region. These commentators that you're talking about simply don't know what they're talking about. They're way off base. But I will say that having worked, I think you know this, and maybe listeners do too, that I have worked together with the Iranian Resistance, the National Council of Resistance of Iran, got its headquarters on 18th and Pennsylvania, two blocks down from the White House in Washington, D.C., worked with them, and it is their group, their member group of that umbrella group. NCRI is an umbrella group, but within it, the MEK, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, they are, I think, the source inside of Iran. Again, this is my analysis. You're not going to hear this from, you know, IAEA or ISIS, the good ISIS, but I think they are the principal source of intelligence and information for Mossad inside of Iran. And the reason I think this in particular is because they hold, the NCRI holds, regular press briefings open to the press, the media, at their Washington, D.C. offices. And I've been to the most recent one, two, three, five, but probably five of them since the end of last year. And each one of those briefings, at each one of them, there were overhead, there were, satellite imagery, commercially available satellite imagery, and reporting from sources inside of Iran about the progress that the Iranian regime was making on not just enrichment. Everybody talks about enrichment, but it's not just about enrichment. It's also about those ballistic missiles. And it is even more specifically about the warheads. Yes, Iran has warheads. Now, they're not finalized. They're not completed. They're not ready to be completely attached to the nose cones of their ballistic missiles. But in those briefings, again, open to the press, and I wrote about them repeatedly at my Newsmax blog site. It's called In Defense of Liberty, Newsmax blog site. I wrote about the what was conveyed to us at the press conferences, and that was that the regime at, this is significant, at ballistic missile sites was working on the final steps of the warheads, not in a separate place, although maybe in a separate place too, but at ballistic missile weapon sites, delivery system sites. They were working on the final steps of the warheads, including things like, a bit technical here, but exploding bridge wire nuclear detonators necessary for setting off the warhead. Things like developing tritium and deuterium. These are isotopes of hydrogen that boost the fissile nuclear yield of a warhead. And they were working on these things at ballistic missile weapon sites. So I put all of those things together. Anybody could. It's completely open source. But that's where I get the information that made me think, yes, they had to go, Israel and eventually the United States, because the briefings are provided directly to the IAEA, to the United States, and to Israel. They say that. They provide everything. It's completely, given all the intelligence they have to Israel, U.S., and the IAEA. And I think it is because they were getting so close to finalizing the final steps on their warheads to fit them, adapt them to the nose cones of their ballistic missiles. I think it's because of that. It's not because they had 60% enrichment, you know, so many kilograms that could have been ready in a few months. No, that's not why you have to be, you know, going, you know, immediately into. You know, these operations that they conducted. I think, again, me thinking this, because it was because of the warheads.
Claire, I want to ask you a different question. You and I both know, yeah. and most people that are maybe older would know. Time marches on, and people don't know these things. But Iran, there was an attempt to overthrow the Ayatollahs. The Ayatollahs took over somewhere in the late 70s, and that's when they. held in captivity so many of our people from the State Department.
Yeah, the revolution was in 1979. Yeah. Khomeini's revolution. Yeah. 1979, yes.
So fast forward, I guess, to, I'm abbreviating their history here, but to Obama's particular era in our country, when he actually started helping the Ayatollahs, sending millions of dollars in cash on pallets, doing really disgusting things, and shutting down real inspections. And so there was a revolt, I will call it that. People in the streets night after night after night. We saw it on television. And the Obama administration refused to help them in any way. Refused. So many
That's
of them
right.
were imprisoned and tortured. So that brings me to this question. This story that I read a couple of, maybe a week ago, there is a prison called Evin Prison. Now, we've heard lots of stories about people being tortured, resistors being tortured in these prisons. So there was an Israeli strike. Okay, there was an Israeli strike on Evin Prison. Is that the prison where the dissenters were kept, and what's that all about?
All right. So, yes, there was a strike by the Israelis against sort of the gate or the doorway opening of Evin Prison. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that was well targeted, because it not only blew the doors off, but it also killed a lot of people inside, including prisoners. So I'm not sure that was, the best targeting there. But going backwards, in 2009, you had the Green Revolution. That's what you were talking about during the Obama years.
Right.
And I've studied Farsi for years, so I know some Farsi anyway. They carried signs in the streets at that point. And the signs in Farsi, it's interesting, there's a play on Obama's name. So they carried signs in Farsi that said, U-ba-ma. So U in Farsi means either he or she. Ba means with. Ma means we or us. So U-ba-ma, he with us. Question mark, and it's a play on Obama's own name. You hear it?
Yes, I do.
Obama.
Interesting.
Obama. And obviously he was not with them and did not help them, did not lift a finger. But I will say, for the Iranian people, their spirit is amazing. And they have risen up and taken to the streets over and over and over again. More recently in 2022, in September of that year, we'll remember the story of the young Kurdish girl, Mahsa Amini, who was actually riding in her family car in Tehran, and apparently her hijab slipped a little bit and some hair was showing, and the police stopped the car, dragged her out of the car, dragged her to police headquarters, and bludgeoned her to death. So that was another uprising that spawned the movement called Zan Zendegi Azadi. Zan means women or woman. Zan Zendegi means life, and Azadi means freedom. Woman, life, freedom movement. Zan Zendegi Azadi. They were crying in the streets, and those uprisings took place in every one of Iran's 31 provinces across the entire country, and had thousands of people in the streets, brutally put down, of course. And the resistance goes on. I think the best evidence of the resistance, bringing us back to our topic today, is the cooperation with the Mossad. And the regime knows that. They know that their most dangerous opponent, threat to the regime's survival itself, is not Israel, it's not the United States, it's their own people who want to be free. But I'll add this one last thing, and that is that the Iranian people say over and over again, they do not want foreign help. That is, not boots on the ground, not money, not weapons. They don't want any of that. They feel that it's their own responsibility to remove this regime on their own and to replace it with one of the people's choosing. And so I think that point needs to be made. But I think people might not realize that that is what the people of Iran want. They want to do this themselves. They think it's their own responsibility.
Now, I've never heard that before. That's very interesting. I did wonder what happened after the bombing when we didn't see people out in the streets as they had been before, if they have been so beaten down that they didn't have the strength or was too great a risk, or if they, and maybe it is that things have changed and they're working with the Mossad. Could it be that? That they have other ways of getting at the Ayatollahs?
It's different things, and they are afraid. I mean, absolutely, yes. This regime, I don't know if you and listeners know, but in the wake of those two operations, Rising Lion and Midnight Hammer, the regime, whatever was left of it, cracked down brutally on the people and began arresting anyone Jewish, for one thing, and many others that they considered to be dissidents. And, you know, threw them in prison again, you know, what happens there. But I will say again that there is armed resistance. Again, this is on the geographical periphery around Iran. To the east, southeast, are the Baluchis on the border with Pakistan, armed and fighting. Up in the north, sort of west, bordering on Iraq, are the Kurds. And then to the south, southwest of Iran, you've got the Ahwaz Arabs, and they are also armed and in revolt. So those groups, ethnic groups, already are armed and in revolt, but many of the people, yes, are afraid, and they have been brutally, brutally suppressed in the wake of, you know, these operations.
Has anyone, you alluded to this a few minutes ago, but it's my impression that they have lost their wicked brothers and the support of their wicked brothers. Like, Russia really didn't do much, and China, I think, sent them some equipment, right? But do you sense that the strong support of Iran has kind of slipped a bit?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That in the wake of what Israel and the United States did to the Iranian regime, both Russia and China stood back. Yes, China apparently has tried to send what they call ammonium perchlorate, which is a chemical that is necessary to make the solid rocket fuel propellant for ballistic missiles that Iran can no longer make for itself because those sites were all bombed. So yes, that kind of assistance. But really, you know, Iran has lost the respect of China and Russia, which are turning more to each other now, those two, because Iran is basically hors de combat at the moment.
So whatever happened, all right, the president said we were going to have talks. And I just read that Steve Witkoff is saying we're going to still do that. And that President Trump is kind of neutral about it. I don't know. What do you know about where the talks are?
They're not. The Iranian regime itself has said no talks. They're not in any kind of mood for talks. And even if or were the United States, President Trump, Steve Witkoff, the envoy, to be looking for more talks, Iran's not about to have any right now.
All right, so you don't personally think, then, based on what you said about what the dissidents want, you don't think that, I really, honestly, Claire, I wanted them to take out the Ayatollahs. I wanted them to do that. And I was disappointed that President Trump kind of insisted that that Israel stop their aggression, because I don't think anything's going to change till they're gone.
Yeah, I was surprised. I think many people were at the abrupt ceasefire. But, you know, be that as it may, that followed really serious degradation, serious damage to Iran's nuclear weapon sites, ballistic missile sites, and regime leadership. You know, I mentioned taking out the nuclear scientists. What I should have added as well is that other senior regime leadership figures were also taken out. For example, the commander of the IRGC, Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the Pasdaran, Hassan, what's his last name?
I can't help you.
Anyway, he's gone.
I can't help you.
Anyway, he's gone. He's gone.
Yeah, okay.
The head of the IRGC Aerospace Division, gone. Many other top leadership, the commander, for example, of the chief of staff of the Iranian armed forces, taken out, gone. Many others. I mean, dozens. So it's not only the nuclear sites, the ballistic missile sites, the scientists, the bank of knowledge, you know, the reservoir of the knowledge of how to do a nuclear weapons program, gone. And also top leadership of the regime's, you know, I call them the guardians of the regime, also taken out. Yeah.
Well, that's all good news. And
but here, you know what? I should add one thing here real quick. And that is that you were mentioning, you know, that President Trump did not want to target the supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Whether or not Israel might have, I don't know. But in any case, that did not happen. But in the last, couple of weeks, end of June, June 29th, to be specific, one of the grand ayatollahs of Iran, named the Ayatollah Nasser Shirazi, he's in Qom. He issued a fatwa against President Donald Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And that is a religious decree on a matter of Islamic law. Can only be issued by a senior Islamic jurist, which Shirazi is. He holds the rank of a Marja'i Taqlid, which means the highest level of the Iranian Shiite 12er clergy. He issued this death assassination call for the killing of Donald Trump and Netanyahu. And following him, another grand ayatollah, also out of Qom, his name is the Ayatollah Hossein Nouri Hamedani, issued a similar fatwa. And then something like 400 top Shiite clerics in the theological seminary city of Qom also issued statements backing those two decrees. And then, to make it even worse, they have accused Trump in particular, I guess Netanyahu too, but Trump in particular, of committing the Islamic crime of Mohareb. Mohareb means someone who has warred or fought against God himself, waged war against God himself. That's Mohareb. And because this is straight out of the Quran, verse 533 to be specific, it's a death penalty crime. But the person so accused can also face crucifixion, limb amputation, or exile. That's straight out of the Quran, 533. So then to make things even worse, in the couple of weeks since the end of June, now we're in mid-July or so, they kind of crowdsourced the assassination call. And there are bounties, millions of dollars in bounties, in rewards being offered by the regime itself in Tehran and other groups affiliated with it for anyone who brings the head of President Trump. Okay, Trump decided, no, we're not going to assassinate the supreme leader, Khamenei. Now, his own Shiite clerical hierarchy is calling for the assassination and crowdsourcing it with millions of dollars of reward attached to that call to assassinate President Trump, who's faced, by the way, of course, death threats from the regime itself, certainly after the January 2020 assassination of Quds Force Commander Qasem Soleimani. But that came from the regime. This now comes from the highest authorities of the Shiite clergy in Iran, which is a very serious matter, more serious than the regime itself going after him with hit teams and whatever else the FBI had talked about here in the United States. But are they here? Are there hit teams in this country? Yeah. You know? Well, we don't know. I don't know, anyway.
I had heard that the bounty's up to like 30 to 40 million to bring. I saw that cleric a couple of weeks ago before this most recent one. I've got the clip of it, but I won't play it. But it's him saying, anyone who can bring us the head of that B, Trump, will receive a reward at 100 billion tomans. And, of course, it's gone up since then. We just said that. The crowd, meanwhile, after that, is chanting death to America. So, Claire, what should be a nation's response to that? Now, seriously, this is not a fly on the wall, or this is not a small issue. They have the capacity to do that. I actually was going to ask you about their capacity. I was reading about what they call Iran Cell. The technology that they have, it's an electronic surveillance capability. They've worked with South Africa's MTN to make it possible. And they can track, according to this article I read, anybody, anywhere. So this is, as you said, very, very dangerous. So if you were advising President Trump, what would you advise him to do?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that this needs to be recognized. This assassination threat, these fatwas, need to be recognized as a de facto declaration of war against the United States. That must be acknowledged openly, spoken of, acknowledged publicly. And then I think that the United States, and this has to be led from the White House, State Department, Defense Department, to recognize that threat and treat it, them, the threats, plural, I guess, treat them with measures that include additional terror designations for individual people, as well as, of course, the IRGC already is so designated, but for people in the top leadership of the Iranian regime, expanded Treasury Department sanctions, asset seizures, anywhere that we can find them or our allies are willing to help us find them, and then also visa revocation, I think, for any Iranian regime-linked academics or media figures in the United States. And they are here. They're in our universities. They're in their mosques. There are Shiite mosques that serve as fronts, or at least as, places where IRGC maybe cuts force, MOIS, that's the Ministry of Intelligence and Security, that's their intelligence service. They use those mosques, Shiite mosques across America, as cover places for themselves. All of these need to be named and targeted, certainly with sanctions and other measures that I've mentioned.
Yeah, I would think that given their eschatology and the way they think, that even economic measures would wound them, cripple them. But even economic measures, it seems to me, Claire, I probably learned this from you. The only thing they understand is strength and power. And I don't know. We may have to, I don't think we have to get into a war with Iran, but I think we could have something to do with taking out those Ayatollahs who have just threatened our president. Or maybe letting, let Israel do it. Let them do it.
Well, I certainly would begin with the measures that I mentioned that include terror designations, which bring with them quite a bit of authority to go after these people in different ways, and the sanctions. And looking at the representatives of that Shiite regime here in America. They're in our universities. They're in mosques all over America. That's where I would start. Make it very clear. Make it very public. This is serious. And no, the war is not over. Well, it wasn't a war. It was a couple of operations. But it's not over, even though a ceasefire has been declared. Because, as I said before, I think that the Iranian regime now will absolutely double down. They've got nothing left, right? Their proxy jihadi forces, Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the Houthis, even decimated. They don't have anything else to protect them except driving pell-mell for a nuclear weapons capability. And if indeed they've got capabilities that went undiscovered, that are still in places, Pickaxe Mountain has been mentioned, that are still, places where they can enrich, do the metallurgical work to form the warheads, any kind of missile capabilities left or that can be reconstituted, they're going to drive for that. They're going to try. We're going to have to go back again. This is not done.
Yeah, I don't think so either, Claire. I don't see how it could be. Well, Claire, this has been great. And I want to remind people, Claire told us this, but her blog In Defense of Liberty is available at Newsmax. It's a Newsmax blog. She writes there regularly. She's the founder and president of Lopez Liberty, LLC. And, of course, she speaks a lot of different places. I don't know, Claire, do you have a website so they could find out where you're going to be?
No, I do not have a website. Very sorry. But I do publish, like you said, at my Newsmax blog. I also publish at places like the Citizens Commission on National Security, as you mentioned earlier in the beginning, the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, also the United West, Tom Trento's group, the United West at their site. So things that I write will be published there. You can also sign up at a place called Pundicity, very interesting, Pundicity, P-U-N-D-I-C-I-T-Y, Pundicity. If you sign up to receive everything I write, the written things, I send them and they distribute to whomever has signed up to receive them. So that's another place you can get things from.
Wow, that sounds like a nifty little site. But anyway, Claire, listen, I appreciate you telling us, informing us so that we know what to think, because this is not over. And as people watch this in the news, I want them to be well equipped to assess what they're hearing. And I know you could do that. And I do appreciate it. You did it great. So thank you, Claire.
Oh, thank you very much. And if I might, one last real quick point, and that is to a point that you mentioned at the very beginning, you know, from Tucker Carlson's rant there. I don't think many people realize that it was the Iranian regime that organized and directed and executed the attacks of 9/11. I don't think people understand that. I know because I was an expert witness in a legal case called the Havlisch case, in which the judge, George Daniels, Southern District of New York, ruled in our favor way back in 2011 that Iran and Hezbollah were co-responsible with al-Qaeda, yes, also the Taliban, Saudi Arabia, too, for the attacks of 9/11. So that, you know, and I can send you all the documents of the case if you'd like them, but people have to understand Iran has, the regime of Iran has never been held accountable for the attacks of 9/11 in four presidents. And
no, I think no one ever talks
more
about
than anything
that.
Else needs to happen.
Yeah, nobody ever talks about that, Claire. So I'm glad you added that, because I did actually want you to comment on Tucker's, and I think that's a good comment. And I think the content of our conversation has kind of refuted much of the things he said in that clip. So thank you. And thank you, Claire, for devoting your life to, you know, protecting this country. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me and getting the word out.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, Claire Lopez, thank you so much. All right, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
As abortion continues to rise, Preborn is expanding their life-affirming care in the darkest corners of our nation to help more hurting women and save more babies. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $15,000 will place a machine in a needy women's center, saving countless lives for years to come. To donate, go to preborn.com/Sandy, that's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Why should I be embarrassed to ask what's in this war for us? We got to go to war. Shut up. You're a bigot if you don't want it. First of all, I'm not a bigot. But second, that's kind of not the point. The point is, what's in it for us? Why is this a good idea? Shut up. And it's exactly the style of argument that I voted against, and I will never accept it. I don't care who does it. I will never accept that. Give me a legitimate answer, a reasonable answer, a sincere answer, a good faith answer. We may disagree. You may say, as a good friend of mine who's totally deranged, but a good person said to me yesterday, Iran is the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. You know, reading the talking point that apparently everyone, a bumper sticker that is for sale somewhere, I guess. And I'm like, okay, I don't even know what that means exactly, but how many Americans have been killed by Shia terrorism in my lifetime, which is 56 years? I can't think of any. I'm sure there have been some in the United States. There have been Shia terror attacks sponsored by Iran in the U.S. I can't think of any. There was 9/11. That was a Sunni terror attack. And then there's the drug epidemic, which has killed more than 1 million people during that same period. People I know, my next door neighbor's kid, dead. People, a bunch of people I know have died. And a bunch have been totally screwed up and taken out of life, basically. Their lives have been hollowed out. They're husks. They've been totally destroyed by drugs. That's the reality that I live in the United States. So you're telling me Iran is a bigger threat than the people peddling this garbage? I don't think so. Not where I live, it's not. Oh, shut up. And the person literally said, you know, we're going to have to agree to disagree. Disagree with what? What are you even talking about?
All right, we started the show with this today, or at least our conversation with Claire Lopez, because I wanted you to hear again. I think this is the second day I've played that clip. But that's Tucker's doubts and... really, he was a strong dissenting voice against doing the bombing of Iran in the first place. Well, okay, I could talk about this, and I have, but I can't think of anyone better to answer Tucker than my friend Brigitte Gabriel. Now, Brigitte was raised in Lebanon, and she and her family lived in a shelter underground. I believe it was, well, she spent her childhood there, and they had trouble getting food. They had to sneak out at night because Hezbollah, which is one of the proxy groups, terror groups, sponsored by Iran, was bombing and trying to, you know, just spreading terror in Lebanon. So Brigitte was on with Piers Morgan, and it was pretty amazing because Piers, you know, has a lot of things to say, but Piers did not interrupt her. He sat there quietly as she explained the nature of Iran. And here it is, Brigitte Gabriel on Piers Morgan.
I want to start with the accusation of the occupation. Israel was minding its own business ever since it existed. It reached out to the Arabic world. It wanted to have peace with the Arabic world. In 1964, when the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, was founded, the West Bank was in the hands of Jordan. It was Jordan. And Gaza was in the hands of Egypt. It was Egypt. So the PLO was founded in 1964, not because of any occupation. They wanted to drive the Jews into the sea and get rid of every single Jew in the Middle East. Israel tried repeating. The only reason the Palestinians lost in 67 and they lost Gaza and the West Bank is because they preempted an attack against Israel. And over again, Israel reached out to them to make peace with them. In 2000, Ehud Barak offered them 97% of the territories back, and they refused it again and again and again. In 2005, when Israel withdrew out of Gaza, they said, okay, we're going to give you your own state. We're going to give you your own territory. Israel forcibly removed its own people, fighting the IDF by force, removed them out of Gaza. Not only to remove the people, they dug out dead Jews' bones from the cemeteries because they knew exactly what the Palestinians are going to do to the cemeteries. So in 2005, when Israel withdrew out of Gaza, there wasn't one Jew alive or dead in Gaza. They turned over the key to them and said, okay, great. Now build your own place. You are independent. I know people that they, Israel even left them the greenhouses. Israel was exporting 50 million flowers to Europe in 2004 out of Gaza. The greenhouses, the fruits, the vegetables, the flowers. They left them to the Palestinians so the Palestinians can start a, they can have an industry where they can support themselves. I know a businessman from New York who even raised $14 million to make sure the Palestinians will be able to get paid salaries as they move over and they continue building the greenhouses. And what did the Palestinians do within 24 hours after Israel withdrew? Not only they destroyed every single Jewish synagogue in the area, they destroyed the greenhouses, ripped out the pipe, and even stole the copper out of the pipe. And then they had an election. So in their first election, the first woman elected to the cabinet of Hamas was a woman by the name Umm Nidal, the mother of Umm al-Muqawama, they called her, the mother of the resistance. And she ran on the platform, I killed three of my sons, because she had videos of her sons, she dressing them in suicide bomb bombers to go kill Israelis. She said, I already gave up three for the cause. I have another seven to give. That's why she was elected. So that's a democratic election for Hamas. Israel did not put the Palestinians in a prison in Gaza. Hamas put the Palestinians in a prison in Gaza. Gaza could have been turned into Singapore. They had the money. They had more money pouring into the Palestinian territories and still do from all over the world. And what did they do with it? Build a tunnel infrastructure underneath bigger than the subway system in New York instead of helping their people. So those who scream about the occupation, the Palestinians have brought this on themselves again and again and again.
Wow. All right. So Brigitte is talking about Hamas. Hamas is a proxy of Iran. That means the Iranians support the proxy Hamas, and they support the proxy Hezbollah, who does terror in those various areas of the Middle East. This is what Israel is fighting, and Iran is the root of all of it. I just wanted you to hear that, to understand Israel is fighting this all by themselves in this little tiny country that's 11 miles across in the smallest area, 11 miles wide. It's tiny. And they're taking on the world. They're trying to take on Iran, and they are our best ally in the Middle East, aside from all the biblical reasons why we support Israel, just practically speaking, they are probably our best friends in the world. It's not Europe anymore. It's not Mexico. It's not Canada. It's Israel. Israel are our partners. And so Iran is a threat to them, and Iran is a threat to us. I hope we've made it clear today, and I thank you for listening. I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because they help you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-10-PLAN. That's 1-800-10-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.